It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, America.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are off and running again for yet another live program on the horn. It is the 13th day of September 2017. This is the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that, of course, is where you go if you're listening live, because chat room's not much fun when there's nobody in it. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you enjoy that kind of thing. Whatever. But if you're listening live, that's where you go. If you'd like to pick yourself out a free password, a free screen name, and jump in and enjoy the Madcap Mary multimedia, zany, wacky, real-time extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. Yeah, if you do pick out a screen name and a password, jump in. You'll be met by Hoghead and Jug of Punch and Squeaky. And, of course, you'll be moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a Spacing Guild Master, has this afternoon folded space to become Man Cave. Yes, yes, indeed. And, of course, we're waiting to see, I presume electricity is back, and we're waiting on all-around great guy, midweek utility chat room moderator, Steve from Georgistan, to wander in. Hopefully he's got power back. Hopefully it stayed back. He got it back last night. Hopefully it stayed back. Amazing to think of a hurricane being so powerful it could reach into the hills of the low knee hills of the Appalachian Mountains and the foothills of, right, North Georgia. Yeah. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and it's prayer meeting Wednesday. It is the 13th, like I said, the 13th day of September 2017, and the little old blue haired ladies, I got to tell you, whipped up a humongous couple of pans of lasagna. Yes, they certainly did, with some homemade meatballs that the little old blue-haired men grilled up out on the barbecue. A merry time was had by all. A little bit of lemon cream cake there at the end that the deacons worked over in short order. And they then headed up the couple of flights of stairs and out into the parking lot where they're chain-smoking with the sinners. So there, that's where they were until Sister Carol Baker showed up with the solar-powered cattle prod crackling away in the mid-September warmth, the last waning warmth of the summer. And then they trundled their massive bulk through past her, through the vestibule, past that bowl of desiccating butter mints, and they're waiting down front for me to call up the minister of music to see get things started properly. Before we do anything else, though, thanks have to go out to the subscribers who, on this 13th day of the month, actually is subscriber. Thank you very kindly to Jay Joshua up in Michigan for for being part of the process and helping to keep the horn on the air. We almost knocked out all the filled in the hole last night. We came very, very close. Thank you, one and all. And thank you very kindly to Frank this morning. Between the two of them, we took down the we took down the fundraising to the point that it is we are only at $270 this evening. 10 at 20, 27, 27 at 10 to remain even for the week. $270, which is not a whole bunch at all, really, considering things. And hopefully we won't have a $470 $470 fundraising hole tomorrow. Oh, maybe you missed it, Celia. The lemon cream cake. Subject line, Deacon's dessert. But Bob, after all the lasagna and the meatballs, what did they have for their luscious dessert, leaving none for the kiddies? That was a lemon cream cake, you know, with the slightly crispy, crunchy kind of lemon-flavored drizzle, you know, not really icing, but not really frosting, and it just kind of hardens up, and it just gives a nice little snap when you, yeah, that with a lemon cream cake. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a little green salad along the way, too. Little oil and vinegar, that kind of thing. I got the salad. I got the salad, and of course there was some Australian-style honey yogurt. Yes. And that's what I had instead of lasagna. So, but damn, the lasagna looked very, very, lasagna, yes, looked very, very, very good. Yeah, I realize that. Randy pointing out the chat room's not much fun when you can't get into it either. Well, that's that old Java thing. There are workarounds, but they're kind of a pain in the ass. Also, by the way, I needed to make mention to you that tonight's program, in addition to being brought to you by the Horn subscribers and Horn contributors, is also brought to you by, at the urging of Brother Deacon Asa, brought to you by Mendacious Mango for all of your mango nutritional needs. That's right, Mendacious Mango will provide your entire daily allowance or necessity of mangoness. Yes, absolutely. A couple of handfuls of Mendacious Mango, and you'll be set. Now, Mendacious Mango takes Horn Labs uses a proprietary process to produce Mendacious Mango, and so consequently, it's not quite as inexpensive as some of our other products. Mendacious Mango, because of its magnificent mendaciousness, well, it's $60 a bottle. But if you order two bottles, we will send you two bottles of Mendacious Mango for only $120. You know, I can't stand mangoes. You know, they've got they're kind of like a peach, but they're not like a peach, and they got that kind of sort of piney taste that you can recognize in bad gin, like it's been distilled through pine cones. I'm not a big mango fan. Never have been. Can't stand mangoes, and the only way that I can consume mangoes is by taking a big handful of Mendacious Mango every day. Mendacious Mango, only from Horn Labs. You can't resist it. Yeah, I know. So let's dispense. Well, okay, a little program note, and it's occasioned by a moment of, well, not a moment, a day of genuine sadness. I'm going to knock off about an hour early this evening because a friend was killed this morning out on the highways. Down on the interstate south of here, and they're having a They're having a memorial for him over in Beckley this evening. I knew him. Ferg knew him, and we've known him for years. And he has gone all too soon and all too brutally. And so we're going to, with your kind indulgence, I'm going to knock off an hour early and go over, and because that way I can get the upload done and go over and share some condolence. I hope that'll be okay. So I just wanted to let you know. Yeah, we'll knock off about 8 p.m. this evening. With my apologies, but hopefully you're understanding. Okay, there's a note coming from Man Cave. Firefox ESR, easy to get into the chat room unless you're a moron. Does that apply to Apple products as well? I don't know. But just the same, I don't know. Try it. See if it goes for you. Okay, so we'll dispense with the singing of the hymn and everything, and just get right into the heart of the matter. I ran across this story after the program last night, and I immediately shared it. When I see something like this, I don't, you know, necessarily just save it for the program. I want other people to know about it who don't necessarily listen to the program, so I put it out there on social media. And it's a West Virginia story, so odds are, if I don't cover it, it might not get covered. And I don't want to have that happen. Thank you, Glenn, for getting us started. Thank you very, very kindly indeed. That means we're down to $260 to go for the evening. And maybe the next time I mention it, it will be the happy news that we've raised all $260 and we're at zero for the evening. Thank you, Glenn. Thank you very, very much. So the story does, like I said, it does arise out of West Virginia. You may recall the location where it happened from a little something that happened. About this time, it blew up in the late fall of 2016. It was about the middle of November, so it was about 10 months ago when a woman in Clay County referred to Michelle Obama, and she ran a nonprofit in Clay County, the Clay County Development Corporation. Pamela Ramsey Taylor was her name. Referred to the First Lady of the United States as, well, she said, "It will be so refreshing to have a classy, beautiful, dignified First Lady back in the White House." Referring, of course, to the incoming First Lady, Melanoma Trump, who, of course, is the first presidential spouse in the history of this country to ever remove her clothes entirely, down to pretty much the way she was born, in exchange, you know, for money. I think there's a word for that, but well, never mind. Back there in November of 2016, Pamela Ramsey Taylor said, "It'll be so refreshing to have a classy, beautiful, dignified First Lady back in the White House. I'm tired of seeing a ape in heels. A ape in heels." No, this isn't and let me just throw an editorial note out there, and I'm sure somebody will write in, some member of the Sparkle Fart Powered Unicorn Cavalry Purity Brigade will write in to call me an establishment shill, dude. But I have no interest in discussing Hillary Clinton's new book. And that will remain my policy until such time as I have actually read Hillary Clinton's new book. Okay? I think one would think this would be an abundantly reasonable position. Well, yeah, but dude, I read two paragraphs that somebody put out on Twitter. Uh-uh. Doesn't count. Context. Either read the damn book before you comment on it, or, you know, people just might not give you a hell of a lot of credibility as to your opinion of it. And I'll be honest, I don't have the money to give Mrs. Clinton right now in exchange for the ability to read her book. So it's just going to be my policy that I'm not going to comment on the contents of the book, and I'm going to ask anyone who does try to comment on the contents of the book, did you read it from cover to cover before the conversation goes anywhere? I've studiously avoided talking about the book beforehand because, frankly, even before the announced publication of the book, you had people on both sides. You know, this is one of those a pox on both your houses kind of moments. You still got the outraged burners and the outraged hilarians who are just gleefully picking at the scab of 2016 in hopes of getting it nice and open and sore and bloody and nasty so that we can go on being outraged at each other instead of, you know, unifying against a common enemy. And I know the words, I know the words I'm using, I know the words I'm choosing when I describe Donald Trump and the maggots as a common enemy. So, I hope folks will take that to heart. If you read the book, you can offer up a comment. If you don't read the book, you have nothing to comment on. Most particularly, not upon why she chose to write it, or whether she should have written it, or anything else about the book. You got nothing. Okay? Now, that's not me being an asshole. That's me just trying to keep a level of groundedness in something resembling reality. How in God's name can you comment on a book you haven't read? Yeah, oh well. But anyway, that was just an aside. The story at hand, so I told that there we had, you know, it was November of last year, and the ape in heels comment about Michelle Obama. And I think I remarked at the time that Clay County, West Virginia, is an especially even for West Virginia, Clay County is an especially ignorant, bigoted, sometimes downright stupid place. As shown in that remark from social media of 10 months ago. But it goes further than that. I remember when the big joke, everybody, the high and mighty in Clay County, had a big laugh when one of the local members of law enforcement spiked a local indigent alcoholic's wine with castor oil, and he essentially defecated himself to death. Now, of course, that was 30 and more years ago, but memory. Well, now we've got another iteration of pig-headed, pig-eyed, drop-dead meanness in Clay County, West Virginia. Clay County, West Virginia, of course, they've got a sheriff's department. And one of their sheriff's deputies is a fellow by the name of Robert Belt. Robert Belt is a full-time Clay County Sheriff's deputy. He's also a part-time bus driver. And he was in full uniform one day when he was part-time bus driving. And by part-time bus driver, I mean he's a bus driver part-time for the Clay County Board of Education, which, of course, manages the public schools of Clay County. Well, it was Tuesday morning, September the 5th, 2017, when an out gay kid got on the bus. Now, the young person manages to go to school every day and puts up with God knows what kind of hell on earth being an out gay kid in Clay County, West Virginia, but that's among the kid's peer group. But the kid, you know, the kid insisted, that's a kind of a sketchy word. The kid, is just out. In a whole lot of the United States of America, a person being out about who they are is not a big damn deal. But in Clay County, West Virginia, of course, it is a big damn deal. And so, this particular Tuesday morning, the 5th of September, the young person gets on the bus, and Sheriff's Deputy Robert Belt, part-time bus driver, after seeing the young student sit down next to another student, just like kids do on school buses. There are not individual single seats. There are bench seats in school buses. This kid takes a seat on the bus, at which point in time, Sheriff's Deputy, Clay County Sheriff's Deputy Robert Belt, the bus driver, in uniform, right down to the gun, allegedly says on the intercom for the bus, "No faggot activity will be permitted on this bus. In my Bible, it states that faggots will burn in hell, and I will not condone it." Yeah. In 2017. So about 3 days later, a parent in Clay County heard about what had happened and went to the vice principal of the Clay County High School, Alan Tanner, who reportedly, allegedly replied upon being given the account, "I don't know what you're talking about." And then later said, "Well, yeah, I reported that to the Clay County Director of Transportation, Jared Fitzwater." He passed the buck on hate. Mm-hmm. Apparently some statements were taken from kids on the bus. And, well, let's put it this way. The sheriff's deputy who did what he did, allegedly, is still on the job, both as a sheriff's deputy and as a part-time bus driver. This is, to say the least, disturbing. To say something considerably more, it is infuriating. Even bass-ackwards Clay County, West Virginia, at some point in time, is going to have to come to grips with the fact that there are gay people in our society, even in Clay County. And I don't think you really get to say even in Clay County. There's probably, Clay County probably has the same basic proportion of gay people as anywhere else on the planet. In terms of just, you know, averages. And so the story it sort of laid around for days and days and days. And in a surprisingly contentless story, WSAZ TV Channel 3 out of Charleston got wind of it and wrote, "The county school system has launched an investigation after learning about allegations against a bus driver." Allegations of what, WSAZ? Clay County community members tell WSAZ the school bus driver used a gay slur when referring to a student who was on the bus. Timeout. Journalism moment. Art of word-knowing moment. The school bus driver and full-time Clay County sheriff's deputy, and why didn't they identify him as also a sheriff's deputy, did not use a gay slur. I don't know, frankly, that there is a gay slur. I will defer to the gay members of the Horn Family Community Congregation on that, but I've been racking my brains trying to figure out what a gay slur is. Would that be like when you, if you walk into somebody's house for a lovely brunch and you find a box of chicken and a biscuits and a couple of cans of string cheese, and you look at the host and go, "Jesus Christ, that is so heterosexual of you." Is that a gay slur? I don't know. I don't get a copy of the Gay Agenda every morning. I'm not that well connected, so, you know. But no, WSAZ, it was not a gay slur. It was an anti-gay slur. Or we could say that the bus driver allegedly used anti-gay hate speech. See, WSAZ, there are other ways of conveying ideas that let people know what happened, even if you're trying really hard not to say what happened. Anti-gay hate speech. because I'm sorry. I guess out there some of the precious and delicate and snowflakey little alt-white, white-wing maggot-type assholes, and bear in mind Clay County is chock-a-block with maggots, make America great again, Trumpansy scum. There's a way to convey that the behavior is, but anyway, the maggots, you know, say,
oh, this is the political correctness is destroying America. This is the goddamn it, Sergeant Carter.
Yeah, right. You can't know it was hate because he didn't say I hate. We kind of can, Cletus. Again, what was the specific remark? Oh yeah, there it is.
No faggot activity will be permitted on this bus. In my Bible, it states faggots will burn in hell, and I will not condone it.
That's hate speech. Is there any discussion on that topic? Is there any contention with the idea that that is hate speech? And further, is there any contention whatsoever that if that full-time deputy, part-time bus driver is found to have uttered those words, that his time holding the public trust should be immediately at an end? You know, let somebody like that go and be a guard on a mountaintop removal site or something like that. But do not imbue them with the public trust and allow them around the most precious element and aspect of any county, Clay included, namely its youth. Superintendent Joe Paxton of the Clay County Schools said he first learned of the allegations when the high school reported the incident in question to the board. This, of course, didn't happen until the few decent parents there said this is intolerable. And good on them. How brave of them. I know it shouldn't be an act of bravery to report hateful conduct, but it is. It is. Superintendent Paxton's entire written statement reads, "In response to the media's request for a statement, please know that administration is prohibited from going into detail regarding these preliminary allegations." Preliminary allegations? I think they're just allegations. He either said it or he didn't say it. He didn't. There was nothing preliminary about it. They called in the. They probably called in the county prosecutor to write this. "I can state that administration is investigating the allegations, which are preliminary, of course, and will do so thoroughly, all while complying with applicable laws and policies that govern the process. Administration always takes allegations of this nature serious, and in doing so, administration takes the investigation serious versus rushing to prejudgment." Prejudgment. Don't want to rush to any prejudgment now, do we? No. And no, I don't. I don't know if the prosecuting attorney of Clay County drafted this statement, because there was a little. Did you notice? For those of us who are practitioners of the art of word knowing, did you notice the little Easter eggs that they left us? Yes. administration always takes allegations of this nature serious, and in doing so, administration takes the investigation serious versus rushing to prejudgment. We take these allegations serious, not seriously, because serious modifies take, and when you modify a verb, you might want to be using an adverb, which the word serious aren't. Continuing onward, regardless of the outcome of the investigation, when we sweep this all under the rug, please know that all of our employees are expected to provide a safe and welcoming learning environment for all our students. Even the gay ones. No, I didn't say that. It's just implied. Of course, I'm kind of hard pressed to figure out how using that hate word and using it repeatedly and using it in context with an effort to bully a child using religion, even. I'm kind of at sixes and sevens to figure out how that creates a welcoming learning environment for a student. As the employee code of conduct mandates, the school system expects all of our employees to exhibit professional behavior by showing positive examples of communications, fairness, and language. Well, now. Also, as required in the code of conduct, the school system expects all of our employees to maintain a safe and healthy environment, free from harassment, intimidation, bullying, and free from bias and discrimination. The intrepid journalists down at WSAZ. Then note that they will continue to follow up with Clay County Schools to see what comes of the investigation. Huh. How about that? Have you ever seen... There are multiple layers with this story. That is about as milksoppy a report on what was basically an attack, a verbal attack on a student, as you could write, and as opposed to just not doing the story at all. A gay slur? Can't even use the word hate in there? Or refer to it as hate speech? Well, we don't have any standards for hate speech here in West Virginia. I guess. But this, it's just another one of those days when it's kind of hard to live here. But this story should get legs. Yes, thank you, Arthur. Giving us some preferred language. Alleged preliminary so-called allegations, Brother Bob. Right, Arthur going on to note that, well, you know, the Clay County school system is welcoming for students who don't like gay people. That's true. Wait a minute. Okay. So we've got a jingle there for Arthur. And now we've got a jingle for James. Proper grammar. The word is tooken. It's tooken serious. You know not how truly you speak, James. You just don't know. But this story should get... Oh, I don't know. Is this just a story for Wednesday? And I'm not talking about Wednesday prayer meeting at the Horn. Is it just Wednesday? Because somewhere in America, some kid trying to go to school is harassed by his goddamn bus driver. I mean, is this one of those, forget it, Jake, it's Chinatown kind of moments? I don't know. I don't want it to be. That's not what I think, and what I would submit what you want the United States to be. But there probably is an element of reality in that. That kids who are any kind of different are subjected to God only knows what kind of misery and torment on any given day of their lives when they go to try to simply get an education. It's probably something like this is probably not an issue in civilized countries. But then again, we're not talking about civilized countries. We're talking about the United States of America. So maybe look it up. Maybe look up the story. Maybe share it on social media. I posted a little essay about it on Facebook last night. If you want to go over to Facebook and just share what I wrote, that's cool too. But not a whole hell of a lot of coverage out there right now. And I think it would be a good thing for there to be coverage of it, just so as to maybe make sure that there's enough light on the subject that somebody doesn't go and kill the kid. And, you know, send him to hell where Jesus says they're going to burn anyway. Oh, absolutely. Brother Deacon Asa pointing out, not hate speech, Brother Bob. It's just a gay slur. Remember, it's not a weapon. It's a utensil designed for defending the self. And defending the soul in this case, because, you know, my Bible says. Right? Yeah. So, again, you know, maybe share this story around so that, somebody like Joe My God or Pam Spaulding or somebody will pick up the story and take it nationwide so that all eyeballs will be on Clay County. Because otherwise, well, that's how little gay kids all wind up all dead. And frankly, I do not want a sequel to the Matthew Shepard story to take place up some goddamn holler in a godforsaken little fold of the hills here in Appalachia, in West Virginia. So, you know, Bob Kincaid on Facebook, run over if you want to, share it, do whatever. But let's try to get a little bit of light on this. Again, not for the sake of the publicity, and goddamn sure not about me, but for the sake of the child involved. Hopefully getting the child up through high school and maybe to some civilized place where the kid can pursue a higher education far, far away from the bass-ackward hellscape of Clay County, West Virginia. Thank you very kindly, Silent R. Lamar, with an offer on the table here at about 16 minutes before the hour. Silent R. Lamar says as follows, challenge on the table, if you raise $170, I will make up the $100, and that'll be $200 for the week. Thank you. Thank you, because Silent R. Lamar kicked in earlier this week. So if we can raise $170, then Silent R. Lamar will toss in a Benjamin, and we'll be done with fundraising for the evening. And we've got about an hour and 15 minutes to get that done in. Glenn, with a note, says, the dirty bastard terrorized that poor child. Imagine being the subject of intimidation by a man of authority with a gun. Yeah. And you know, he said that with other kids on the bus. Now, take this to its logical next step. What does that guy do if it's just him and that child on the bus? Maybe beat some Jesus into him? I don't know if the child's male or female, and it doesn't matter, but it's just a question of what kind of pronouns you use. What happens if those two are alone? Because who knows what's going through this Christian's mind? Rape? Beat some Jesus into the kid? Right. And if this guy gets away with it, then that child knows that that child is not safe for however long that child remains in Clay County, because it will have been blinked at. It will have been tacitly, the conduct of the deputy sheriff bus driver will have been tacitly approved. Lib Talker weaponizes audience to persecute Christian state official. No. I just don't want the kid to get hurt. That's all. Thank you for the kind condolences, Bill. Thank you very kindly. Young man was only 26 years old. Sad. Note coming from Ron in Raleigh. How about this, Bob?
Today, here on the EIB network, reporting from an undisclosed location, we will report on Hillary Clinton's book. Since I'm using half my brain, I don't need to read the aforementioned tome to give a full accounting of its contents.
That smells way too much like truth. Steve on the Gulf Coast, subject line, so long as she stays out next time, buy a bushel of them. Read the book, buy the book, or the paperback, for that matter. If these multi-million-dollar-per-speech self-serving career politicians had anything interesting to say, if they even wrote their own damn books, it might be worth a read at the local library. How many of the best editors... That is not going to show up at the local library here in almost level west by Trump, Virginia, Stan. Come on, Steve. Wake up and smell the moonshine. My God, if there was a copy of that book at the local public library, whose book purchases are largely confined to historical romances involving historical figures having close personal relationships with Jesus Christ... No. If that book showed up here, it would immediately have a Hitler mustache. She would immediately have a Hitler mustache drawn on her in Sharpie, and in like brown crayon all through the book. Devil woman, devil. Yep. How many of the best editors at Simon & Schuster spent how many hours making the poor old thing's book into something readable, especially if it's pure shit anyway? These publishing houses won't even look at a manuscript if it isn't already nearly perfect, coming from a working author. These are just the facts. Here's the point. Let Hill peddle her teary-eyed frustration on the street corner, or better yet, just put it in the public domain, for the sake of democracy, I guess. Hell, send the proceeds to some hurricane victims. Fuck these egotistical bastards. You'd think the whole country's so stupid we're reading the words of a Cicero or a Voltaire.
Oh, well, I just answered my own question. Regards, Steve on the Gulf Coast. So, at some point I may read it. But like I said, I don't have the money right now, and I don't. I mean, if I had a review copy, I'd read it. Because I'm not necessarily sure I'm gonna just. I don't know. I don't know what's between the covers. I don't know what I'm gonna. I don't know if I'm gonna disagree with everything. I do know, for instance, there's an entire chapter devoted to the "we're gonna put a whole lot of miners out of work" thing here in West Virginia. Oy. But I can't comment on it because I haven't read it. Scott and Punky. Hillary Clinton question. Don't know if this counts as conversation about the book, but here goes. She was recently interviewed in connection with the book by Jane Pauley on CBS Sunday Morning. Jesus, she's been interviewed by everybody except the guy who does play-by-play on Australian rules football over this thing. That's not, you know, I mean, she's doing the interview circuit, in other words. When asked about her future plans for politics, she stated, "As an active politician, it's over. I'm done with being a candidate," she added, "but I am not done with politics because I literally believe that our country's future is at stake." Now, here are my questions for you. One, do you believe her? Do you think that her sitting things out as an active candidate is a good idea? I think, oh boy, I'm going to get in trouble here. I think that getting as far away from the divisiveness of the 2016 primary campaign is one of the best things that could possibly happen. How's that for an answer? Do I believe her? It's awfully hard to walk back because she didn't leave herself a lot of room to negotiate. I'm done with being a candidate. Does that mean she's not going to run for anything? Does that mean that if some Democrat won the White House and gave her a seat on the Supreme Court that she'd turn? Oh, she might take that. Or maybe she'd be happy to be Secretary of Defense or Secretary of State or some more. But I don't know, because I'm not inside the poor woman's head. And by poor, I don't mean that she's got a poor head or. No, I just. I have some sympathy for her. I have some sympathy for anybody that gets absolutely slimed for 25 continuous years by the right-wing filth machine. I got a lot of sympathy for that. Because it can't be pleasant. Thank you to Charlene and thank you to Liz. We're down to having $135 to go to meet Silent R. Lamar's challenge. Thank you, Lamar. Thank you very kindly, and thank you to Liz, and thank you to Charlene. I mean, here's just how mean and crazy it can get. This thing just literally just now crossed my screen, courtesy of the good old New York Times. Martin Shkreli, oddly enough, I mentioned him on Monday. Remember the guy who jacked up the price of a widely available drug used by HIV patients to mitigate the effect? Right. Martin Shkreli, the former pharmaceutical executive who is awaiting sentencing for a fraud conviction, was sent to jail today after a federal judge found that he presented a threat to the community because he had offered money for a strand of Hillary Clinton's hair. Now look, if you're the most hardcore burner out there, You can't be okay with that. You can't just sort of breeze by that by saying, "You're goddamn Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the NC establishment shill." You can't do that. The fucker put a bounty on her. Mr. Shkreli, who was free on $5 million bail while he awaited sentencing, offered $5,000 on Facebook, cheapskate, to anyone who could grab a hair from Mrs. Clinton during her book tour. Where does this end? Now, there's a free archive out there of this program and everything that's been said on it. And I argued strenuously in favor of the candidacy of Bernie Sanders. I critiqued Mrs. Clinton for things that she had actually said and done in the course of her career. No Clinton body count, no Benghazi, none of that bullshit. When she stared down sweaty Trey Gowdy there in the House with, what was it, 9-11 hours of testimony and didn't bat an eye, Lash? Kind of hard to bat an eye. Kind of like it's hard to tie your shoes, tie your shoelaces. It's one of those things. It's my dad. Words. You know, we talked about how damned well tough she was and smart. But it was my considered opinion that Bernie Sanders was the better of the two candidates going forward. And I advocated strenuously. I was a partisan. But my candidate didn't win. Spare me the Debbie Wasserman Schultz DNC, oh my God, establishment shill bullshit. My candidate didn't win. There were millions of people who chose Mrs. Clinton over Bernie Sanders, my candidate. And they did so for a variety of reasons. But I'm a political, I'm a grown-up, especially where politics are concerned. And, you know, it would be nice, but it's nothing I expect to see. If people, you know, I'm sure Bernie would condemn what Martin Shkreli said in a heartbeat. Because Bernie didn't get to be a member of the Senate by being a political neophyte. He knows the internal workings and goings-on of American politics as well or better than anyone else. And he would find this as odious, I suspect, as I do. But it would be nice if there was a great big pushback against this turd on two legs, Martin Shkreli. For having put a bounty on it. Can you imagine that? So I guess Martin Shkreli doesn't think that Hillary Clinton has a right to do a book tour. I wonder who else people think doesn't have a right to do a book tour. There's a certain amount of I don't know, that's a little bit creepy. Judge Kiyo A. Matsumoto said at the federal hearing in at the hearing in federal district court in Brooklyn, there has been a danger presented through this post. Well, I'd say so. Anytime you put a bounty on someone, even if it's a lock of hair. And what the hell did he want with a lock of hair anyway? Was he going to do voodoo? Was he going to do DNA analysis to prove that that's not really Hillary Clinton? Has he been playing Hillary Clinton speeches backwards or something? But there's an angle here that I would encourage us to take a look at. This is a federal judge who has jurisdiction over a person charged with criminal conduct who is on bail. And when presented with an allegation that the person had essentially put a bounty on another person's well-being, because, you know, what, you're going to walk up and go, Mrs. Clinton, the pharma bro Martin Shkreli said he'll give me $5,000 if I can bring him a lock of your hair. Can I have a lock of your hair? And so she goes, well, sure, give me a pair of scissors. Snip, snip, snip. Here you go, son. That's clearly not the intent. I'm sure because he's such a raging smartass, Martin Shkreli thought that he was somehow or another, doing a play on, bring me the broom of the Wicked Witch of the West. But here's a question. How is it? How is it that a federal judge can look at something like that and say, this guy clearly presents a danger, and we can't look at somebody like, say, Bill O'Reilly, when he every night, Tiller the Killer, Tiller the Killer, Tiller the Killer, until somebody went out and killed Dr. Tiller. Or somebody like Glenn Beck, who screamed, Tides Foundation, Tides Foundation, Tides Foundation, until somebody took off to go and murder up the Tides Foundation. Or the guy who went and shot up a Unitarian congregation after he read entire books full of vitriol against people with whom they politically disagreed, people like Bernie Goldberg, people like Michael Savage, Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh. No, those guys get to say, well, you know, I just put that out there publicly for power. We're only entertainers, my friend. Well, Your Honor, I was just having a little bit of fun. You know, I was kind of equating her with the Wicked Witch of the West. Bullshit. You go to jail. And now, apparently, Martin Shkreli will likely remain in jail until his sentencing hearing come January. After having been convicted of three counts of fraud regarding some hedge funds and a pharmaceutical company. You tell me. Looks to me like we've got a double standard. If you're a multimillionaire right-wing broadcaster who can hide behind the skirts of the First Amendment, you got everything going for you. If you're an asshole like Martin Shkreli, who puts a bounty on a human being, the same way that right-wing hate broadcasters put bounties on people, Tiller the Killer, well, not so much protection. Yeah, and as Lizardo points out in the chat room, Pizzagate. You know, Pizzagate. A guy showed up at Comet Ping Pong Pizza in Washington, D.C. and shot the place up with a semi-automatic assault rifle because of shit that he heard from Alex Jones. Alex Jones goes away untouched. See how it works? Yeah. So there we are at the end of the filibobster for this prayer meeting Wednesday. Oh, Lord, we've got a bunch of other stuff to fill up the next 55 minutes or so. We'll take a little break and come back after that. Hopefully we will raise 135 more bucks and meet Silent R. Lamar's very kind challenge that he put on the table for the evening. Thank you, Silent R. Lamar, and thank you, everybody who has responded, and to everybody who, I hope, will respond. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. We'll be back.
Changing ways, so-called liberated days. A story comes to mind, a friend of mine. Georgia boy was gay, I guess. Nothing more or nothing less. The kindest guy I ever knew. His mother's tears fell in vain. The afternoon George tried to explain that he needed love like all the rest. Power said there must be a mistake. How can my son not be straight after all I've said and done for him? Leaving home on a Greyhound bus, cast out by the ones he loves, a victim of these gay days, it seems. Georgie went to New York town, very quickly settled down, and soon became the toast of the great white way. Accepted by Manhattan's elite, and all the places that were chic, no party was complete without George. Along the boulevards he cruised, and all the old queens blew a fuse. Everybody loved Georgie boy. I saw George alive was in the summer of 75. He said he was in love. I said I'm pleased. George attended the opening night of another Broadway hype, but split before the final curtain fell. Deciding to take a shortcut home, arm in arm, they meant no wrong. A gentle breeze blew down Fifth Avenue. Side street came a New Jersey gang with just one aim, to roll some innocent passerby. There ensued a fearful fight, screams rung out in the night. George's head hit a sidewalk cornerstone. A leather kid, a switchblade knife, did not intend to take his life. He just pushed his luck a little too far that night. Sight of blood dispersed again. A crowd gathered, the police came. An ambulance screamed to halt on 53rd and 3rd. George's life ended there, but I ask who really cares? George once said to me, and I quote, he said, never wait or hesitate. Get in gear before it's too late. You may never get another chance.
Cause youth's a mask, but it don't last. Live it long and live it fast. Georgie was a friend of mine.
Minutes past the hour on this prayer meeting Wednesday here at the Horn. We'll be going for another 50 minutes or so. Like I said, I'm knocking off a little bit earlier this early this evening because of a memorial that I have to attend. Other stuff out there. Yeah, other stuff. How about the fact, well, there's a, and I'm honest, I'm trying to remember. You help me. Maybe your memory very well is better than mine. I'm trying to remember the last time the White House called for someone to be fired. Because that happened today. That and I mean, I'm not trying to make something more out of something that isn't, that happened today. Are you familiar with Jemele Hill? She's a she's an African American reporter at ESPN. And she's good at what she does. But she does not, and I don't know why we expect people to, she has found herself unable to sit idly by with a public platform while the President of the United States does the things that Trump has done. In a series of tweets, Jemele Hill said, "Donald Trump is a white supremacist who has largely surrounded himself with other white supremacists." As Marty reminds me, you may have heard her on Edge of Sports with Dave Zirin. There, like I said, there was a series of tweets, but that's one of them. Donald Trump is a white supremacist who has largely surrounded himself with other white supremacists. This, of course, created an OMG firestorm of white wing butthurt. She went on to tweet, "Trump is the most ignorant, offensive president of my lifetime. His rise is a direct result of white supremacy, period. He has surrounded himself with white supremacists. No, they are not alt-right. And you want me to believe he isn't a white supremacist? He is unqualified and unfit to be president. He is not a leader. And if he were not white, he would never have been elected." Just show of hands, because this is just like Romper Room, and I can see all the little hands out there going up. Show of hands. Does anybody have a problem with what Jemele Hill said? Applying the standard that truth is an absolute defense, isn't every word that Jemele Hill published true? Is there anybody, you know, I'm not talking about the maggots. Because, you know, they'll just take a breath from, take a break from picking their teeth with their toenail clippings and say, oh, it's just making America great again and all lives matter. And go back to what they were doing. But no, Donald Trump has unleashed in this country a shitstorm of neo-Nazi, skinhead, Klan activity, and he doesn't even have the moral courage to disown it, straight up, without any qualifications. Witness the fact that the House of Representatives just recently passed a resolution condemning white supremacy. The Senate did the same. It's sitting on the desk, and unless something happened in the last few hours that I missed, the White House is having a real hard time figuring out whether they should sign it or not. Hint. A president who doesn't have white supremacist leanings and proclivities says, give me that damn thing, and signs it before it's fully landed upon his desk. Not Donald Trump. So, you know, Jemele Hill said these things. And she didn't say them sarcastically. She said them earnestly, from her heart. Well, lo and behold, the White House really is demanding that she be fired. Now, if, and this is strictly hypothetical, if someone were to bring the matter that we discussed at the beginning of the program out of Clay County, West Virginia, to the attention of Sarah Huckabee Sanders, she wouldn't be able to demand that that sheriff's deputy part-time bus driver be fired. But that, of course, is not that's not what's at what's in play here. Oh, no. No. In her press briefing today, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, was asked about Jemele Hill, she was apparently reprimanded by ESPN for daring to say that the President of the United States is a white supremacist, you know, when he is, when his daddy was a goddamn Klansman, busted at a Klan riot in 1927. Who surrounded himself all during his campaign and during and into his presidency with various Klansmen, skinheads, neo-Nazis, alt-white, alt-right, what the ever. Yeah. Well, it found its way... It found its way into the press briefing today.
Do a better.
Here we go.
system.
But hold on.
Oh, damn it. Where's that coming from? All right, let's try it again. Here we go. Sometimes the magic works. Sometimes it doesn't.
Yesterday said Donald Trump is a white supremacist who has largely surrounded himself with other white supremacists. His rise is a direct result of white supremacy, period. He's unqualified and fit to be president. Why do you think, do you have a reaction to that? And is the president aware of that comment? And
I'm not sure if he's aware, but I think that's one of the more outrageous comments that anyone could make, and certainly something that I think is a fireable offense by ESPN.
Yesterday.
There. She said it. It's a fireable offense. It's a fireable offense. Jemele Hill should be fired for expressing her opinion that Donald Trump is a white supremacist. And according to Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who, let's remember, works for Donald Trump, that's what constitutes an outrageous statement. Mexico is sending rapists. Not outrageous. Grab them by the pussy. Not outrageous. Donald Trump is a white supremacist. Outrageous. You know, come on, anonymous guys out there. This is we live in a world where information is pretty hard to protect. How is it that the outtake, the raw footage, the raw tapes, how is it that the raw tapes of Donald Trump's Apprentice segments remain more closely guarded than practically our nuclear codes? How is that? Because remember, we've been told in the past by production staff that those unedited tapes are filthy with Donald Trump uttering, yelling, barking, snarking, sniping, etc., that scurrilous, vile, vulgar, hateful word that begins with the letter N. Sure would be nice if we had that. Hey, Julian Assange, buddy, you mean to tell me that you could lay your hands on all that other stuff, but you can't seem to find one of the single most damning pieces of information that might very well save this world from annihilation? You know, proof that Donald Trump is a goddamn, is exactly as Jemele Hill said, a goddamn racist? Or, Julian Assange, are you just another right-wing libertarian turd who isn't interested in that kind of transparency? Just the transparency that fits with your political agenda. Randy says, yeah, funny thing about those outtakes, they would have cost Hillary $5 million to expose, but she wouldn't spend that. No, other people offered to pay that money instead, and they still stayed buried. One presumes because they're in the possession of a dear friend of Donald Trump who has, what, the only copies? The millions of dollars was about people breaching confidentiality agreements to talk about it. And doing so on the record. It's fair game. Remember Gary Hart? Gary Hart, who it turns out had a very, very good mind and might have been a pretty decent president. Remember when Gary Hart challenged and, you know, that good mind was on vacation, or I don't know, big head overruled by little head, whatever. And he challenged journalists to follow him because he said he was innocent of any charges of philandering. And that's how we got the, my God, it was a long time ago, and it seems so innocent now. They got a picture of a woman sitting on his lap out off the Florida coast in a boat called the Monkey Business. And that ruined Gary Hart's presidential ambitions. Remember that? But we can't seem to find concrete proof that Donald Trump is the racist that Donald Trump is. I mean, you'd almost think that those apprentice raw videotapes were more highly protected than Putin's pee-pee tape. On the other hand, straight up racism, it runs like a sewer all over this country. And you can't and you can't get Sarah Huckabee Sanders to condemn it for love nor money. Our buddy Todd in South Carolina has been kind of busy lately. And so consequently, he takes one for the team and watches Washington Journal while Agnes and I are watching that other program. I don't know if Todd got to see this, but this happened on air on Washington Journal. When Washington Democrat, member of the House of Representatives, Representative Pramila Jayapal, appeared to answer questions. And, of course, she immediately not assaulted, but she was immediately taken to task by a maggot. Here's the audio. Wait a minute. Okay. Try it again.
John is in Sebring, Florida, Republican. Hi, John.
Yeah, Abby. I got three comments. These illegal aliens that they brought in here illegal on their own is costing $530 billion a year for the benefits they get, at plus $23 billion child-earned income credit they're claiming on their income tax, and some of them, the kids, are even living in Mexico. They've never been in here, not even kin to them.
All right, John, hang on the line.
Yeah, hang on the line, John. I got a question. Let's play a little game. Who does John in Sebring, Florida, listen to every day? Is it Rush Limbaugh? A. B. Sean Hannity. C. Michael Savage. D. Alex Jones. E. All of the above. That's right, that's right, that's right. The answer is E. All of the above. Because, see, he had his bullshit statistics committed to memory.
I want to talk to you.
Okay, well, the congresswoman's shaking her head at your figures. Where did you get yours?
It is true.
Well, that's a damn fine response. So the host tells him to hold on. He said, "No, I won't talk to you."
And some of them, the kids, are even living in Mexico. They've never been in there, not even kin to them.
All right, John, hang on the line.
I want to talk to you.
Okay, well, the congresswoman's shaking her head at.
Yeah, he's a white man in Florida, little lady, girly woman, and he's going to give you a piece of his mind. He's going to mansplain you some.
And your figures, where did you get yours?
It is true.
Finish up your thoughts, and then
we'll I don't know where I got my figures, except for Alex Jones and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Michael Savage. I don't know where they got them figures, but they's true.
This is why we can't have nice things.
Have the Congresswoman respond.
Okay, they took my grandkids' jobs. They took my kids' jobs, run them out of business. These people brought these kids in here. They're just as guilty as the people that brought them in here. They need to be deported just like their parents.
Yeah, them children is brought in here 3-4 year old. They're guilty of sin. You know how it is with them shifty Mexicans. They can be guilty. You know what? They can be guilty when they're precious little fetuses in the womb. They absolutely can be, because they's like devil spawn and probably Catholic and stuff.
It's just terrible what these people is doing in this country. There's not, like the one guy said, he said 30 million out of work. There's 90 million out of work in this country, and are taking all these good jobs.
Okay, heard your point. Congresswoman.
John, it sounds like you're in a lot of economic pain, and that is true across the country. And
that's one of those you can hear from space. Con! Obligatory Star Trek reference. Bless her heart, bless Representative Jayapal's heart. It sounds like you're in a lot of economic pain. Oh, Congresswoman, 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 Congresswoman. He's not suffering from economic anxiety. Ma'am, I respect your effort to reach out. John in Sebring, Florida, who just cited you a raft of shit that he saw on a fucking Klan flyer, is a racist. He's a xenophobe. But I guess it's probably not a good idea for you to call him out on the air or anything. That's about the size of it, Arthur. You're so pretty, you better shut up and listen, darling. Make yourself useful and get me a sandwich. You've got that down way too well, Arthur. Just saying. But, really? The economic anxiety thing? I mean, if that's a tactic, I guess, okay, whatever. But, damn. When you plead economic anxiety, even on their behalf, you're covering for their racism. Ma'am, he would gladly burn a cross in your yard, and it wouldn't have a goddamn thing to do with economic anxiety. You're feeling a lot of economic pain. When we don't call this vulgar filth out and name it, because remember, Donald Trump told us that. We have to call things by their name. He didn't say radical Islamic terrorism. Of course, I don't say radical Islamic terrorism anymore myself, but he didn't say radical Islamic terrorism. Jesus, I start doing Trump and the hands start flying around. Ooh! Where's an exorcist when you need one on prayer meeting Wednesday? But you got to name things. You got to call the racists and the xenophobes and the bigots what they are. But still, that's why Representative Jayapal's in Congress, and I ain't. So let's give her a chance.
They need to be deported just like their parents, it's just terrible what these people is doing in this country. There's not, like the one guy said, he said 30 million out of work. There's 90 million out of work in this country, and are taking all these good jobs.
Okay, heard your point, Congresswoman.
John, it sounds like you're in a lot of economic pain, and that is true across the country. And there's no question that we as a country need to deal with economic inequality across the country and the fact that we need to make sure we have good paying jobs for everyone. I am committed to that, and I'll tell you that right here, looking into, I can't see your face, but looking into your eyes, if you will.
Yeah, you don't want to see his face, okay? Besides, it's behind a goddamn pillowcase right now, ma'am.
But I'll tell you, to blame immigrants is completely wrong. And here's why it's wrong. Immigrants contribute more. We've got tons of studies that we can send over to you, John, but immigrants contribute more than they take.
He ain't interested in no studies, ma'am. He already knows he's right. He done told you that. No, she asked him. She said, "Where did you get your numbers?" And he said, "They're right." He don't want no numbers nor statistics from you. Well, hell, you could bring him down there a brand new Chevy Yukon Cadillac Escalade, and he wouldn't take it from you because he don't take things from your kind.
It is a lie that they take public benefits because they don't qualify for just about every benefit. Now, there are some states, like my state of Washington, is very generous to immigrant kids. And we don't check status on some of the benefits that we provide to children in health care. But,
well, see there? That proves my point. You don't check status on immigrant kids up there. And I ain't got no kids in Washington, but you know what? They put my kids that aren't in Washington out of the jobs they don't have in Washington because they need to be deported. Even the fetuses.
Immigrants are not eligible for benefits. So this is a myth that people are spreading because it's valuable to be able to wedge a working white person in whatever state you are and an immigrant and to blame somebody. But John, I got to tell you, that is not who you need to blame. Who you need to blame are the big corporations that aren't paying their fair share of taxes and are creating jobs that don't pay as well and do not allow somebody to work 40 hours a week and actually take care of their families. And
okay, you know what? That's true. But that is a separate issue. It's an entirely separate issue. We do have a problem with the kid gloves way we treat corporations in this country. And it's a bad problem. But here, that is a separate issue from the fact that you've got a hardcore, cancerous knot of hard cases and dead-enders, the maggots in this country, who will hide behind any fig leaf that a politician or a member of the for-profit media will provide to them in order for them to hide the fact that they're goddamn neo-Nazi sympathizers if they're not outright neo-Nazis, that they're Klan sympathizers if they aren't outright goddamn Klansmen. Pure and simple.
I am on the side of the working person across the country, whether you live in rural or urban America. But let's not blame immigrants. It's going down the wrong path. It's always easier to have somebody to blame, but immigrants are not the cause of the country's economic woes.
And Congresswoman, as an immigrant yourself who came here when you were 16, when you hear comments like that, what do you think about? What do you think about your own journey?
Well, you know, I've been doing this work for a long time, so I'm used to hearing it. I've been called all kinds of things. I've been threatened with lynching. I've gotten hate crimes or, you know, hate threats over the years.
Then why can't you call out a racist when one directly confronts you on national television, ma'am? Because until we do, they're going to continue to be a problem, and they are going to continue to grow as a problem.
The majority of Americans, I believe, think that immigration is good for the country and that people like me have helped build the country. A lot of Americans, majority of Americans, I would say, remember that their parents or their grandparents came over here with nothing and that because of the Statue of Liberty, the words on the Statue of Liberty, because of our founding fathers who recognized that this country was a country striving to be a more perfect union and that we were welcoming people from all over the world to come and build this country, I really believe that that is what is in the hearts of many people. And there's a small minority that are trying to divide this country by trying to blame immigrants. And to those people, I would just say, you're wrong. We have always been and always will be a great force for good.
Hear, hear. But the fact of the matter is, the guy you were talking to was one of those people. He doesn't, you know, John and Sebring probably doesn't know who his ancestors were past his grandfather. And there's every chance in the world that John and Sebring is one of, you know, my people.
My people!
You know, borderers. Who have been here for so goddamn long that they forgot that they were immigrants. Or maybe coming here and having ancestors participate in a genocide against the native peoples who lived here, maybe that confers some sort of status. We stole this here country fair and square, goddammit. And so I understand what Ron and Raleigh means when he says, once again, a Democrat comes to a gunfight with a wiffle bat. You need to call these assholes for what they are. And he's not referring to Representative Jayapal as an asshole, but yeah, when you've got the exalted Cyclops on the line, talk to him like he's the exalted Cyclops. And in one of the more in the same vein, in one of the more humorous things that's happened in the last couple of weeks, I don't have the story directly in front of me, but I'll try to hit the high points. So we remember White Power Barbie, don't we? You know, Tommy Lauren, who worked for Glenn Beck until she said that she believed in conservative Christian family values, principles, except when it comes to her ability to control the workings of her own reproductive organs. Yeah. And then Glenn Beck suddenly, you know, showed her the door. She's, what, 24 years old, White Power Barbie Tommy Lauren is. We referred to her in the past as Miss Aggrieved White Privilege 2016. She's looking to carry over the title. She's been on an anti-immigrant tirade lately. Talking about how, you know, you broke the law to come here and this here's a national laws, blah, 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 blah. Well, there's a woman out there who is pretty swift at doing genealogical research, or research, as it's pronounced outside the cornbread curtain. And she started digging into Tommy Lauren's genealogy. And she didn't have to do anything sneaky or dirty. She used public resources. And she found Tommy Lauren's grandpappy or great-grandpappy, who came to this country from, like, Germany or something. I mean, look at her. He didn't come here from Sicily, okay? And it turned out the guy was actually indicted for a felony by a North Dakota grand jury for lying on his immigration report because he forgot to do the paperwork and then tried to doctor the document. Because even in North Dakota in 1917 or whenever it was, that was a felony. And so the grand jury of that county of North Dakota actually found a true bill against Tommy Lauren's immigrant grandpa for illegally entering the United States. Now, they put the case to a jury of 12 men, tried and true, who looked at, you know, Gramps, and said, "Aw, shucks, what do we want to throw him out for? He's just like the rest of us. Let's show him some mercy, why don't we?" And so they, even though the guy was, pretty obviously guilty, the jury there exercised a little bit of what's known as jury nullification and let him walk and let him stay in the country so that he could He could go on to make Ficky Fick and make the woman who would then marry the man and the Tommy Lauren in 2017, tweeting about how we're a nation of laws and you don't get to break the law to come to America, because apparently the goddess of irony has found Tommy Lauren. Time to get right with the goddess, Tommy. You don't want her tweaking your perfect little Aryan nose. You just don't. Oh, I know. Arthur says, whoa, wiffle bat? Do we have to be so aggressive, Brother Bob? How about a nice air wiffle bat instead? That way nobody gets hurt. That's kind of the point now, isn't it? Yeah. What else? As we wind down, we had the story last night of another privileged white female, Katie Quackenbush. Every time I see Quackenbush, I hear Chico Marx. Hey, Dr. Quackenbush. Oh, if we don't rehearse, you can't afford that. But we had the story last night of Katie Quackenbush, who got out of her car to gut shoot a homeless man in Nash Vegas and then left him to lay there and die while she jumped back in her Porsche SUV and hot-footed it the hell away from the scene, after which she was eventually arrested, charged with attempted murder, and let out on $25,000 bond with her lawyer daddy down in Texas, Lawyer Quackenbush. Lawyer Quackenbush. She draws that lawyer like a gun. Lawyer Quackenbush said that she sure didn't mean to shoot that homeless feller, because she said she closed her eyes when she was a-shooting of the gun. It was warning shots that she put into his belly. Right. Well, a few more details are emerging on Katie Quackenbush. She is, as are just about every third person in Nashville, an aspiring singer who has moved to Nashville, having previously lived in Amarillo, Texas. Damn it, Ron. Oh, wait a minute. Preemptive cowbell. Ron in Raleigh says, any relation? Bob, that sounded like Sven Kincaid. Any relation to Crocodile Kincaid? Well, yeah, sure. Only about the way back about the 10,000 years ago when the Kincaids left to Scandinavia and headed for the Scotland, after which they wound up getting transported to Australia. Distant kin. That's what they are. Yeah, you betcha. Ron apparently is the official keeper of the various incarnations of Kincaid. Sven Kincaid, Sodbuster of the Plains. Yes. Anyway, back to Katie Quackenbush. Well, apparently gut shooting a homeless dude is not her first run-in with the law. They apparently didn't know this when the merciful judge of common pleas or whatever it is there in Tennessee set her bail. But she's had a couple of prior run-ins before she hot-footed it out of Yellow, Texas. I mean, that's what Amarillo is. Amarillo, isn't it? Isn't that yellow in Spanish? So she comes from Yellow, Texas. And while there, apparently she got herself popped a couple of times on assault charges. The first assault charge, according to the Nashville Tennessean, has been dropped, but the second one remains pending there in Texas. Mm-hmm. like I said, she's out on bond, but she she'll make an appearance in court on October the 6th. By the way, according to the police, she never got around to actually reporting the problem she had with the homeless guy. Because they blame him. And, oh, he was yelling at him and stuff. And making sexist remarks. But they didn't report it to police. I understand. These things don't necessarily happen. Sometimes you don't want to deal with police in that situation because, and so you just gut shoot them instead. Mm-hmm. Somebody else entirely who happened to walk by 54-year-old Mr. Melton, who had been gut shot twice, was the one who called for help. And in fact, it was only after she had lawyered up with a mouthpiece by the name of Peter Striancy, S-T-R-I-A-N-S-E, Striancy, don't know. She lawyered up, and the lawyer then called the DA's office, and the DA's office then called the police and said, you know, she might have been involved in gut shooting the 54-year-old homeless guy, you know, twice. So, you know, there was a little span of time there to get the story straight. Pappy Quackenabush, who was apparently lawyering this thing at a distance, said that his daughter got charged with assault down in Texas after she threw a glass of water in her ex-husband's girlfriend's face while they were at a restaurant because of some insulting remarks. And that's why in October 2013, 4 years ago, when she was at the tender age of 22, the Amarillo Police Department arrested her on domestic violence assault. And then she got $10,000 bond hung on her when she was charged after she slugged another woman. That one was dismissed because the victim asked for the case to be dismissed, and there was a $400 attorney fee. In that case, the victim asking for the case to be dismissed, you know, the woman that she slugged was Katie Quackenabush's mama. Meanwhile, her lawyer said, her lawyer, when the Tennessean asked if he thought his client was a violent person, he said, no, I think that's really overblown. In a perfect world, perhaps the police department would interview Mr. Manoukian and hear his story. Look at his video and get the other side of the story and credit the fact that Katie was acting in self-defense and in defense of her friend. It just like sometimes you have to slap mama around a little bit to get mama to see reason. Yeah. The domestic violence case does remain open. Right. Whew. Wowzer. Oh, and since we started the program with a story of a student in almost level west by cold Trump Genistan, the Trumpiest place on earth, let's close the program with a story from neighboring Kentucky, one of the Trumpier places on earth. Oh, and by the way, we still have an offer to kick in an extra $100 courtesy of Silent R. Lamar if we can raise $135. And here with 6 minutes to go in the program, I realize it would be an hour and 6 minutes if I wasn't knocking off early. But it's 6 minutes because, you know, the memorial I'm going to. But we got 6 minutes and $135 to go to meet that kind challenge offered by Silent R. Lamar. Anyway, back to Kentucky, where I know you're tempted to laugh. There is an institution of higher learning in Kentucky, in Lexington, and it is older than the University of Kentucky itself and claims a number of famous graduates, among them old Jefferson Davis. And it is Transylvania University. Because that was one of the early proposed names of Kentucky, Transylvania. Because where Pennsylvania is Penn's Forest, Transylvania is up the place that's across the forest. Latin. Paolo Garcia is a senior at Transylvania University. And, you know, she's in her last year of college. She's done her work. She's, And there's a little puke also at Transylvania. Sometimes they get the admissions process wrong. I mean, look, you know, Jefferson Davis graduated from there. There's another student there by the name of Taylor Ragg, R-A-G-G. And Taylor Ragg has taken it upon himself to start a one-man campaign to destroy the life of Paola Garcia. Taylor Ragg, for reasons, well, let's put it this way. The photograph that we have of him shows him wearing his MAGA hat. Taylor Ragg is a maggot, a member of the maggots. And he went on Facebook and wrote, "Everyone go report this illegal at my school bragging about breaking the law." This was toward the end of last month. You see, Paola Garcia had demonstrated the unmitigated gall of remarking on a photograph of dear leader Trump, "Not my president." I use that hashtag a lot myself. And so immediately in the wake of Taylor Ragg's campaign, she has been inundated with hate. One commenter on Facebook saying, "Hope you enjoyed your visit back to them dirt floors of your homeland, stinky ass." So Paola Garcia went to the administration at Transylvania University to report the attack on her on social media. But there at the Transylvania University administration, where they have happily taken her money for 4 years, they said, "Well, Taylor Ragg's activities don't violate our non-discrimination policies." University President Seamus Carey said that Ragg only recommended possible responses to her anti-Trump profile. And then he asked to meet with both students, but only Ms. Garcia attended. Taylor Ragg, being from among the maggots, knew that he could not show up and not a damn thing would be done. In his social media account, he can be found posting shit from Alex Jones and stuff with Pepe the Frog on it.
when the Lexington Herald leader reached out to him, he said, Lexington Herald leader is fake news. And then he reached out to something called the Narrative Times and said, and the following appears. Illegal alien boasts about being here illegal and suddenly gets a reality check. That was the Narrative Times headline, referring to Paola Garcia as stupid and a crybaby. And then called for readers to opine on the constant liberal bias on college campuses. By the way, Paola Garcia was brought to the United States when she was 2 years old. And she grew up where? Of course, West Virginia. And tried to get out of West Virginia to go to college. And didn't get far enough away. A spokeswoman for Transylvania University, which refused to do anything about the guy terrorizing her, said, Transylvania does not condone or tolerate hatred, bigotry, bullying, or harassment in any form. And our president sent an email explaining the university supports DACA and condemns intolerance. And then the president also said, as a country and as an institution, we are governed by laws. These laws protect the freedom to express one's viewpoints, even when those viewpoints are different from our own. Thus, there are times when our laws seem like an obstacle rather than a support. If we want justice to endure, however, we cannot succumb to frustrations that would have us break the law or violate policies. Yeah. Of course, it was back in April that another Transylvania student, or another Trumpansy, rather, another maggot, attacked students at Transylvania with a machete. Well, I'll tell you what, you'd kind of hate to have the president of Transylvania University in your corner in a spot, wouldn't you? Jesus. So, it's time for me to wrap up. Again, I thank you for your kind indulgence. Ordinarily, I would not do this, and I don't like doing it, but there are things you do because you care about people and you're their friends. And so I'm headed over to Beckley. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you. Thank you very kindly. Thank you very kindly, Sparky, in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox and Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And yes, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. We'll be back tomorrow for the regular program. Good night, y'all.